I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN. And welcome to the Friday morning edition of the Sports Reporters. And gentlemen, oh, I just heard a sound in the background. It is a bouncing basketball. In fact, many bouncing basketballs, as the, I guess it means that the NBA playoffs are about to begin. And I think the first place we start is with the team. Are you ready for this, guys? You're sitting down now. You got your pen and paper ready.
Yep,
you can write this one down.
Yep.
I'm not going to. You feel free to use it. We are talking about a team of their wounded warriors.
And Bob, they start off with an intriguing team, which is, they're always intriguing. The San Antonio Spurs, who were briefly on the outside looking in at the NBA playoffs this year. No Steph Curry for the Warriors. Great uncertainty about the Warriors, who do come limping into the playoffs. And think about how recently a Spurs-Warriors playoff series would have felt like the main event as opposed to a first round.
To me, San Antonio has everything to gain here, and Golden State has everything to lose. Everybody's written off San Antonio already as a next-year team, and that all depends on Kawhi Leonard. Their off-season drama is already considered to be bigger than their in-season. This sets up perfectly for Popovich, who is a fantastic coach, to coach his way through a one-round, basically, championship for them. Let's face it, if San Antonio knocks Golden State out, they don't have to win another game for this season to be a huge success. Whereas for Golden State, everything is about them surviving.
No question. And San Antonio doing it with, of course, with LaMarcus Aldridge has had a tremendous season. In a year when there have been many people giving us tremendous individual seasons, his has probably gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit. But he has turned out to be everything that they wanted him to be when they signed him at great expense last year, and he was basically a flop. And but now, not this year. Whatever pilot light went on, I don't know. But he's been terrific. And beyond that, you know, they've got three Hall of Famers sitting on the bench, coming off.
Yeah. You know,
three geriatrics in Gasol, Tony Parker, and the now 40-year-old Manu Ginobili. But you talk about experience. Oh, brother.
And Bob, you know, when you look at the Spurs, okay, however we want to look at this series, they got a puncher's chance, okay? How much of this is that the Warriors are encountering right now? Not just that they got passed in the regular season by the Rockets, okay, but how much of this is just the fatigue of wearing the crown, okay? Because they still believe the second series against the Cavs was just a some sort of weird speed bump because of Draymond Green's suspension. But when you look at the Warriors, I come at this in a different way. It makes me appreciate even more that LeBron keeps going to the finals every year.
Oh. 'Cause
they show you, it's the old Indiana Jones lines. It's not just the years, it's the mileage.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, no, there's no question. We'll shift over to that aspect. You can't. I do get a little annoyed at people that just still, to this day, still won't let go of the decisions, won't let go of certain petty nonsense, and will not grant LeBron his proper due as an astonishing all-time great, who, by the way, in his 15th year, had as good a year as he's ever had, including the single best month of his career. It's ridiculous.
We're going to talk about LeBron shortly and the East, but staying right where we are, the star of the moment who has the biggest spotlight on him is not LeBron James. It's Kevin Durant. Let's face it. This is now his season to lose. And if he does not carry Golden State through this first round, all the accolades that were showered on him last year for his performance and stepping up are going to turn into criticism. If you look at their record without Steph Curry, they're 17-14. Mm. 17-14, all right? Now, Kevin Durant ought to be worth more than that. Kevin Durant on your team alone ought to get you better than just barely over 500. So this says a lot about how much he really can carry that team. You know, they gave him all the credit last year.
Yeah.
Like I say, this to me is the most fascinating first round series because I love situations where guys are defending champions and they are teetering. And you have a team, you know, when you mention those three guys on the bench – Don't you think all three of them could retire after this year, right? Do you think they want to go out sitting on the bench, or do you think whatever is left inside them, they are going to throw out there on the floor? And don't you think Popovich knows that and will utilize that if he sees it?
And the one of the three that I take a note in the last month is I pick up box scores daily and go, whoa, Manu. Manu's had a little resurgence of late, so I'm just throwing
it
out.
No, he knows what time it, he knows what time of year it is. And by the way, Mitch, it's amazing. All NBA conversations kind of do filter through LeBron in this way. Would you be doubting for 1 second? You guys know I always do this. Let's take this guy off that team, put him on the other team. Okay, would you be doubting for 1 second that the Warriors would get through if you switched LeBron and Kevin Durant? No, you would not.
Remotely.
So now Kevin Durant, Mitch and Bob, is being asked to do what LeBron James does all the time, what he did in Miami, what he's done since he got okay, get them through. Because he is now asked to do what LeBron has done pretty much his whole career.
With one caveat. He's got still got Draymond Green and Klay Thompson on the
like
rest of the
Heat.
Team.
No.
Way more than LeBron has ever had.
Well, no. I mean, you got to get – he had Bosh and Wade in their primes in Miami.
Well,
so it wasn't like a bunch of guys he met at the Y. The point I'm making is, okay, Kevin Durant – with this stage and with the chance to go play for that team comes the responsibility of now not winning him a championship, just getting him to the second round.
Yeah, and the thing is, his image has been altered subtly over the years now, Durant, to where he was originally – I'm speaking for me. You tell me if you agree or disagree. We thought of him as a sweetheart with the backpack and the Bible and nice and friendly.
Mom.
And he's turning into a pit bull before our very eyes. And ears. You know, there's a different edge to him. Now, he's allowed to grow up in public, which these guys basically all do, and we've seen many others do it in a very positive way. But I don't get the same feel. I guess what I'm getting at, he's not from afar as rootable in generic terms as he once was. Not to me, anyway.
All right, let's go over to a former team, Oklahoma City, and who takes on Utah, which is... This is a really interesting 4-5s. You know, a lot of the times, it's like, yeah, really? I don't want to watch a 4-5 matchup. I love this matchup. I really want to see what's going to. Utah is exceptionally good for a team that's 48-34. And again, all the West teams were all bunched together with good records. But with the big men in there, with Ricky Rubio finally going to the playoffs on that side, and the OKC new experiment, which has taken a lot longer to gel than the experiment in Houston, which Houston took, about 24 minutes to find out if Harden and Paul could play together. And they're still waiting to find out if Westbrook and George and Anthony can play together. It's like, well, we need another year to see if they can play together. This is also a really interesting matchup.
And you know, you guys have heard me say this all basketball season. There was no better coaching job in the league than Quinn Snyder did in Utah. They lose Gordon Hayward. Of course, the Celtics ended up losing Gordon Hayward too. Yeah. But they have this wonderful kid in Donovan Mitchell, who has been, as much the rookie star of the league as anybody. I think they were like 19-28 and going nowhere, and now have finished the way they do. But you're right. The Thunder.
They were nine games under 500 at one point.
19-28. The Thunder, you know, it's funny. The Thunder have had surges during the season. You said, okay, they figured it out. Then they fell back. And I think George went for 40 in the last regular season game. They're a tough out, okay? But they got to get past Utah first, who has had playoff success before under Quinn Snyder. But I want to see now, with the lights turned up, how the George, Westbrook, and, oh, by the way, your old friend Carmelo do in the playoffs.
You know, Carmelo, you know, I mean, to me, you know, I'm hardly a member of the fan club, so I'm very, I've always been skeptical about him. But, you know, there's a guy on that team that can pick up a team, and, you know, I mean, Westbrook is capable of amazing things, truly amazing things. And you can debate the cows come home, whether he's this quote unquote selfish player and what the validity of the triple doubles are and all that. But the fact is, the guy is amazing. The guy can help you in so many different ways. And he is a Is there a fiercer competitor in the league? The answer
no.
Is,
and Mitch, no. Mitch, do you give the Timberwolves a chance of doing anything against the Rockets? Because that game that they played to get in the other night against the Denver Nuggets, you would have taken that as a game seven in any playoff series we've got coming up in the early rounds. Can those kids from Minnesota, can they? Do you think they have any chance to mark up the Rockets for a game or two?
I really don't. I think their big hurrah was getting into the playoffs, and they're celebrating themselves that, you know, we're finally here after 14 years. I think Houston's on a mission. You have two guys here, remember, who not only have gelled wonderfully and have united their games around one another, but they're also united by something else. They have a reputation of not getting it done in the postseason. And nothing hangs over an NBA player worse than, yeah, you're a regular season guy, but we can't count on you in the postseason. Both Harden and Paul carry those reputations in as underperformers in the postseason. And that's enough motivation for them to be done with anybody who's not worthy of them in four games. I could see that series being a sweep. They have their eyes on getting past both of them where they have ever been before. And by the way, that's not very far. So I see this first. They're the team on the mission to me when they get into the postseason.
Rockets in six. I feel just
six?
The opposite.
Six.
Yes, I think it's going to be one of those series. Yes,
wow.
And Butler is going to rise up and have a great series. And
six.
It's going to be 2-2 coming back home, putting pressure on the
six.
Rockets to put up or shut up. That's my call.
I'll tell you what, Towns and Butler, forget about Wiggins. Towns and Butler are really good. And I don't know how, if that's why I threw that question out there. I don't know if they take any momentum into, and again, that was a great game the other night. It's a great last 5 minutes. But I'm going to be much, okay, now we switch to these. Much as I will be interested to see how the kids in Philadelphia do now that they're in the playoffs, I will be interested to see what the Timberwolves can do. Okay, about the Sixers, the second hottest team in the league, basically over the second half of the season. And again, we talk about coaches' jobs that never get noticed. Bob, Jeff Van Gundy called Eric Spoelstra a Hall of Fame coach to me one day earlier this season. And I said, well, wait a minute. Guess what? He probably is a Hall of Fame coach. He and Riley have done a tremendous job with the Heat. I kind of want to watch that series.
Well, I'm all aboard the Philly bandwagon. So yes, no, I am. I've jumped on it, and I'm happy for the quote unquote long suffering fans who went through the process, and all that. And I'm basically an auxiliary Philly guy. Grew up 35 miles from the William Penn statue. And I'm happy to have them back in the mix. I'm looking so much forward to a rekindling of the rivalry with the Celtics, with the youth core on both teams. I said, all right, now. But they're here now. And this is all new territory, as you said. But what they do have is experience on the bench. One of the great things they did a masterful job in the front office this year. They picked up Ilyasova. They picked up Bellinelli. And they gave themselves some real depth that they didn't even have at the beginning of the season. And by the way, they've been done what they've done for the last 2 weeks without Embiid, who we assume is going to come back sooner rather than later. And maybe not the first game. It's going to be fascinating, I think.
Well, you made the right point. These are young kids. And it's always fun to watch young kids who you know are going to be superstars eventually in the league, and they've got three players who all qualify for that, take their first steps in postseason play.
Yeah.
Sometimes they overachieve, witness Magic Johnson and his first time he went to the playoffs, and sometimes they stumble. And they just aren't up to the moment yet, and you watch them mature. These are very young guys, but on the other side, they're up against Miami, which don't be fooled by the fact that you'll see Dwayne Wade in a Miami uniform. You know, they'll be wheeling Dwayne Wade out. And yes, he had a good game when they played. In fact, they beat Philly a couple times, I think. But over the long haul, that's where Dwayne Wade is going to wear out. And so Miami's essentially a young team, too, in terms of the guys that they rely on. So, I like Philly's chances to get to the next round. I don't think this has been a mirage, what we've been seeing with them. But you never know how guys are going to react to playoff pressure. And if this series is 2-2 coming back, and I do not – boy, I want to see if that one that you predicted goes six. You know more about basketball than I do, so I tip my hat to you, Bob. But, man, if that one goes six. But this one goes 2-2, all of a sudden, you know, shakiness enters into the minds of rookies.
And Mitch and Bob, and I'm preaching to the choir with Ryan here. The Sixers come in with an absolutely fascinating, gifted player in Ben Simmons. And Bob's talked about him all season long. In a three-point world, he's not interested. He is not interested. He is a 6'10 guard who, Bob, it makes me remember John Calipari's old line about Marcus Camby. His position is basketball player.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He doesn't even want to take a 15-footer sometimes. But
no.
Two days ago, I was down in Miami talking to Don Mattingly for a column for MLB. And he had gone to see, because he's kind of going through the rebuild that the Sixers did with the Marlins. And he's an old Indiana basketball star. He went to see the Cavs play the Sixers, and it was as much to see Simmons as it was to see LeBron. It is going to be extremely interested to see if Ben Simmons is ready for, finally ready at 21 for this kind of primetime situation.
Yeah, no question. He's been likened. Jalen Rose compared him, and you know, think about it in terms of the style and what he does, it's kind of a second coming of Magic. He's 6'10". He is a guard by spirit and definition, a legitimate guard. There's no ambiguity about that. And as you pointed out again, he has a restricted offense, but it works for him.
It does.
Now, who would have thought that the Cavaliers would be playing in the 4-5 round? I mean, this is really interesting stuff here. Again, they're going up against Indy, another team with absolutely nothing to lose. Nobody expected anything out of Indiana. If they lost Georgia, it was like, well, we'll see you. You know, you're in that rebuild mode or tank mode or whatever. And instead, they finished only two games in the standings behind Cleveland. They were the team that stopped Cleveland's big, long winning streak, remember, in the middle of the year. They've got Victor Oladipo. And, you know, I don't think they're going to win the series, but I think that they could get a couple games off of them, because I think Cleveland, you know, has that thing about revving up through first rounds is not exciting anymore for a team that only measures itself by finals and wants to go back again for a fourth time. This is a, what do they call it? A trap game. This is a trap series
Cleveland. You brought up a name that, you know, other than hardcore NBA fans, Bob, you know this. It was, George is gone, and who's going to replace him? Victor Oladipo? Victor Oladipo is such a great story. I mean, he averaged 23 points this year. He's an Indiana University, former Indiana University player, and he has done as much to carry his team as all of the stars we routinely talk about have done to carry theirs. And again, another coaching job that has been completely obscured by the bigger names is the one Nate McMillan has done in Indianapolis.
Guess who's leading the league in steals? And you know, he came into the league with his reputation as defense first, and it has held up, and now to adding on to 23 points. No, he's one of the great players in the league. They certainly had one of the great seasons. But they're another one of the kind of stealth thing, you know, that little no attention. And they're playing, you know, to me, they're playing one of the, it's a clear house money situation. And, you know, they could be dangerous. But I have so much belief in LeBron. This one I'm calling in five.
Okay. See, there you go, Mitch. One other question: talk about wounded warriors before we move on from the NBA. And I'll address this to Bob, but also to you, Mitch. Do the Celtics have enough to get by the Greek Freak and friends?
It's a toss-up series, but now you're talking to a profound pessimist by nature. Okay, so I expect nothing. I've set the bar. Not only the bar is not even set. I buried the bar. So I dug a hole and I stuck the bar in it. So to me, the Celtics are nobody's playing with more house money than the Celtics in the circumstance that they're in. So, they got enough to beat but the Greek Freak has laid a hurting on them already a couple of times this year. Trust me.
He buried the bar.
Mitch, what he did to the bar, is that
he
a thing? Can you really do it? Can you
I don't
bury
think
the
can
bar?
Bury a bar. Bar rises.
I never heard about
rise.
Anybody bury and then he stuck a thing into the buried bar. That just sounds gross.
A lot of shovel
house
really.
Money for the Celtics fan, any Celtic fan who expects anything big is an idiot. I mean, they don't have Irving. They don't have Smart. They don't have Tice, who was really important. And they're not the same team. And they're playing a danger team. It's kind of dangerous. I mean,
I'm going to tell you an upside, pessimistic Boston man. There is an upside to this. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, guys like this, that other rookie, what's his name, Semi? I don't know how he pronounces his name.
Ojale, yes.
Yeah, this is all good stuff for them. If the Celtics have the guys who you're mentioning who are absent, yeah, they're going to go further in the playoffs, but those guys are not going to get the experience that they're going to get. They are playing to build a resume for next year's playoffs. And if these young guys can lead the Celtics into the second round, imagine when you've got Irving and Hayward and Smart back next year and guys on your team like Tatum and Brown who weren't going to get those kind of minutes and the other guys having playoff experience. This is all good for them for the 2018-19 season.
Well, Mitch, you're amplifying my theory here. Yes, it's all about next year. Yeah. And by the way, Tatum and Brown together are about as old as Vince Carter individually. So, I mean, yeah,
right.
that's how young they are.
Yeah.
No, I'm all with you. I completely agree with what you just said. And that's why I'm saying it's all about next year and what they get out of the benefits they can derive from the series. If they win it, great. If they don't win it, you know, it's not a disaster. And it just isn't.
House money.
I'm not worried about it. And I'm happy to have them playing the Greek Freak because he's one of the most fun players on earth.
All right. And Toronto, wake up. It's playoff time. All right, before we move on to Colin Kaepernick back in the news again, let me tell you about Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except they're stretching your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. In fact, to switch to baseball, it's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they literally have you covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast, and you can see what deals are happening at Mattress Firm. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. That's a great 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play and how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. So, wonder of wonders, Colin Kaepernick gets a phone call from the Seattle Seahawks and says, hey, want to come in for a workout? A workout is reportedly set up for Monday of this week. And then, in what is the most mysterious turn of this whole thing, apparently, and again, this is what's being reported, Kaepernick gets a call a couple days before Monday, not when they originally called him, but a couple days before Monday, say, oh, by the way, what's your stance going to be on kneeling? Can you tell us for sure that you're not going to kneel during the national anthem? Kaepernick reportedly says, I can't tell you that for sure. And ta-da, the tryout is postponed. And the next day, he's testifying at a deposition for his case against the league. What do we make of this?
Well, first of all, Mitch, do you think anybody whose style fits the Seahawks better to back up Russell Wilson than Colin Kaepernick does? So let's just look at this from a football point of view for a second and realize once again that he hasn't been worked out by a single team since he became a free agent. So that's we start there. OK, so clearly he is being asked to make a promise, if these sources are correct, and I believe that they are, that they canceled the visit after he told them he couldn't tell them whether he's going to continue to kneel or not, that he is not going to do this again. Because why? Because it's bad. They have decided for business. But let me ask you both this question. Say Colin Kaepernick is the only guy kneeling in the NFL. Will the walls come crumbling down? Will the league suffer another huge hit in popularity because of one backup quarterback in Seattle? Come on.
Now, look, we all know the deal. But wouldn't that be the first question you'd ask him?
Exactly. That's what is too smells too weird about this. Why would you suddenly decide to ask him a couple days before he's coming in and not ask him when he was, you first arranged this? Now, I talked to Adam Schefter yesterday about this. His suspicion is, for conspiracy theories out there, that the NFL got to Seattle and said, hey, before you do this, you better determine if he's going to do, because we don't want this starting back up in the 2018-19 season. We've had enough of it before. And that somehow then they felt compelled to ask the question. Now, I hate conspiracy theories, but I can't make sense, Bob, just like you, about why wouldn't that be the first thing you would ask him before you would, why go to the trouble of arranging a tryout and then think of asking him the question?
Yeah, that does. So that certainly lends credence to any theory that that there was an intervention from outside on their part. You know, I'm just looking at, again, at what he did when he was viable. And how many quarterbacks in this league right now are going to go through 10 to 12 or maybe even 14-year careers and will never ascend to the heights that he did 6 years ago, taking that team to the Super Bowl, which they only lost by 3 points? It's such a farce. It's such a joke. We know the deal. What are we going to debate? We know he's being blackballed. We know they're worried about business. I underestimated personally last year, over the last 2 years, the effect that that the Vox Populi would have on the thing that the kneeling would have on fans. There were more people out there who reacted adversely and scared the owners than I thought there would be. And I guess that hasn't changed. And by the way, on his own part, what has happened in the last year in the news to make him alter his basic viewpoint on the world, you know, other than more young black men being killed in very dubious circumstances by officers of the law?
Hey, and by the way, Mitch, when you look at the history of this league and you look at the miscreants who have gotten to keep or get back jobs in this league, how is Colin Kaepernick a threat? Dante Stallworth was once charged with DUI manslaughter in Miami for striking and killing a guy when he was behind the wheel of a car on the MacArthur Causeway. He went back to being a football player. You're telling me that this Colin Kaepernick taking a knee in protesting, guys in Sacramento getting shot and killed by police for the crime of carrying a cell phone, that somehow he's a bigger threat to the league's image than all of the guys who have gotten jobs after doing really bad stuff in this league?
But you're talking in the abstract, Michael. You're talking in what is a fair conversation about what's right or wrong or what's bigger or smaller. That's not the way the NFL judges this. They judge this on money. They judge this on ratings. They judge this on what they perceive, rightly or wrongly, to have been a sinking of their popularity last year by, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10%, that they want to lay at the feet of these protests. And for them, the dollar rules. So
they are small-minded cowards.
Of course.
They're small, scared, small-minded people.
But they are small-minded business people, and the business is the first, the capital B of their reputations, and that's all they're interested in. So to me, I mean, I understand now that you can't just work out Colin Kaepernick. He carries too much baggage, and we all know, guys, we've all covered these teams, we've all covered football teams, you know, this is a groupthink thing in the NFL. Don't bring baggage into our locker room, whoever you are. And you're right, there are a lot of miscreants, Michael, but there have also been a lot of miscreants and with weird reputations who have also been shunned over the years, even though they had a lot of talent, because it's why we don't want that in our locker room. We don't want the mob of reporters that comes in and races right over to the guy who, by the way, isn't the most significant player on our team. And Colin Kaepernick, as a backup quarterback, would not be. I've said this a million times. If he has Tom Brady's skills, he's being offered jobs everywhere because, you know, you need a starting quarterback. You can survive without a backup quarterback or go get a different one. And that's the way that they're looking at it. It's not worth the trouble. Otherwise, talent-wise, of course Colin Kaepernick would have gotten – he would add 12 workouts by now because everybody wants to have a backup quarterback. But you can't just work him out. The minute you bring him in, the circus comes to town. And that's probably what Seattle's backed off on.
In reference to what Mike was saying, I'd just like to ask, when's the last time a fan base at any sport rose up in direct vocal or written opposition to the hiring of a felon. If the, they don't on a moral basis. When did I'd like the documented example of a professional sports fandom rising up
Ray Rice
never got a job. You're absolutely right.
No, but Ray the fan, Rice. But not, but the that wasn't.
Sure.
No, he didn't get a job, which we all agreed. But that wasn't because the fans.
You
did not
so?
Morally objected. Was
you
it?
You don't
fans?
Think that that's why he's not on
yeah.
teams.
And because he's actually, and Bob, you know, the funny thing is, Ray Rice has probably done more good in this recent part of his life without being able to get a football job, and has spoken to kids and is much in demand and owned it and wore it. And I've stayed in touch with him over the years. And by the way, and again, I don't think these are abstractions I'm talking about. Leonard Little of the Rams was another football player who in 1998 crashed into and killed a woman in St. Louis, Missouri. 1998, okay? You know how many years he played in the league after that? Nine more.
Oh, the league is full of guys like that. I mean, it would take us the whole show to go through guys who have done abhorrent things and things that you would think from sexual assault charges to drunk driving charges who are back on the football field. But as Bob points out, people don't stop watching because they're out there, or they don't tell pollsters, I don't want to watch the NFL anymore because of that guy. Now, I have no proof as to why the ratings were down for 10%. Nobody does. But I know the NFL believes that it had to do with those protests, and you take 10% of their TV revenue or TV audience away, and they're going to react. And that is it abhorrent? Is it despicable? Is it ballless? Is it all those things? Of course it is. It's all those things. But that it's their business. They can do it. The only thing they can't do, ironically, is call one another and say, "Hey, don't you take that guy? Don't you do it? Don't you have him come in and try out
and
for you?"
Way,
and they all
and
get
there.
That's
way,
called
Mitch,
collusion, and that's
Mitch,
what he's in a lawsuit about.
Mitch, by the way, if it is true that there was a call from the league to the Seattle Seahawks, then the league is going
to
be in a world of trouble. And yeah, they just made things much worse for them because they are keeping this man from earning a living because of his political beliefs.
Here's a Vegas bet for you guys. Put this down, and I want to know where you would put your money. Who will be in the NFL sooner, Colin Kaepernick or Johnny Manziel?
Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, I'd have to if between the two. Kaepernick's never.
And by the way, that won't be a circus, Mitch. That won't be a circus when he shows up and he's over in his corner. All right, listen. Before we're going to stay on the NFL and talk just briefly about the draft. Before we talk about a powerhouse baseball team from Queens, New York. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious cooked dinner by a chef. And Bob, how many times has Mitch talked about walking into his kitchen and there's a chef
there
preparing a Freshly meal?
It's, with the hat and the whole thing. Yeah,
it's a little off-putting to Janine, but, you know, she's learned to live with it. No more worrying about having to figure out what you have left in the fridge, and especially no mess to clean up after. Freshly's chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients they can find and then work with nutritionists to ensure their meals are as healthy as possible. I love the chicken parm. I love the penne. I love the shepherd's pie. It's actually really good food. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options. I'll tell you, Mitch, when Bob is burying the bar in the NBA and he comes in, he's so tired. It's so good that he has an easy-to-cook Freshly meal waiting for him in the kitchen. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Let me tell you, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home, too. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to Freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. Okay, quickly on the NFL draft, I'm actually fired up for this draft, okay? Because, not just because the Jets and the Giants have high picks and may both pick quarterbacks. We do not know which of the four fashionable quarterback picks are going to go first, whether it's going to be Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Josh Allen or even Baker Mayfield, the boy who grew up living in a shoe, okay? And I want to know where Saquon Barkley is going to go. I want to see if Chubb goes in the first five picks. I'm just saying, I'm usually not fired up for the draft. I am this time.
Yeah, and of course we're all intrigued too because Cleveland, as his Cleveland's history is so sordid and stupid. That, yeah. Are we going to automatically feel sorry for the kid that gets picked because it's going to mean he's going to be in the curse? But no, Mike, you're right. And how high a running back's going to go in this world is going to be very interesting. That's for sure. And although the concept is slowly getting back now, and I abstract question, guys. Have we peaked in this mania that the running back position is not important? Have we peaked? Are we now gaining a little common sense about that?
Mitch,
position?
You saw a lot of Barkley. You saw a lot of Barkley. Are we not in agreement that if there is possibly one transformative player in this draft, and I know he's a running back, isn't he the best player coming into this draft?
I could make an argument that he's the best player. It's hard to compare offense and defense and these kinds of things. But offensively, I think he brings more to your team. Remember, running backs are more than just running backs. If they're really good, they're also receivers. And if they're really, really good, they can block. So they do three things on a team. And I agree with you, Bob. The pendulum swings in the pendulum. There was a time when Mike Ditka traded 11 picks for Ricky Williams to draft him as a running back. And now it's like, why would you take a running back in the first round? And I'm like, I don't know. It seems to me that two out of three downs, generally you're handing the ball to the guy. Why is that not an important position anymore? But what has happened is, it's not that it's not an important position, it's not a longevity position.
Yeah, that's the NFL it's value. It's about value, right?
It's about value. It's like, we'll get 2 years out of him, and then he'll be old and broken or injured, and we'll go get somebody else. It's like a gadget that you know is going to break, but you buy it anyhow, and then you know you're going to have to buy another
one. That's a good point. It's a good point because we all know Le'Veon Bell is one of the handful of most important people in that league.
Absolutely.
And he's but when he's 30 years old, we'll see where he is.
And that's the thing. These guys want to play. But, Mike, I'm totally with you on this quarterback thing. And I would hate to be – well, first of all, I hate to be the Cleveland Browns no matter what. I would never want to be the Cleveland Browns. But they are in that Ryan Leaf or Peyton Manning world where, like – God, we don't want to go down in history as the team that picked the Ryan Leaf and then Peyton Manning. The Jets get to pick third. It's like, well, we had to pick third, so we would have taken one or two. So if their quarterback craps out, and let's face it, don't we all think it's going to be three quarterbacks in a row unless somebody trades?
Yeah.
Don't we think it's going to be three quarterbacks in a row?
The Giants, listen, Mitch, it's logical to think that the Giants, who have not had this opportunity since they got the quarterback, Eli, who won them two Super Bowls. You remember those two Super Bowls, don't you, Bob? The one where the guy caught the pass?
They're a bit fuzzy in my memory, Mike.
But so that they can't pass up a quarterback now that Eli is 36 or 37. I forget how old he is. Mitch, logic says that quarterbacks are going to go. You hear a lot about Chubb. And again, I do not mean this pejoratively at all. Saquon Barkley is the joker in this deck because I think they're all in agreement that he probably has the most talent for this sport as anybody. I think the Browns are going to take Darnold, okay? And then it's a question of, do they like the Giants, like the big kid from Allen from Wyoming? And we keep hearing, and you never know what's a head fake at this time of year, keep hearing that the Jets are fascinated by Baker Mayfield despite the fact that he if he's anything, he's 6 feet tall.
Well, I'm starting to hear that a lot more about Baker Mayfield than we did 2 months ago when he was the outlier. And Lamar Jackson starting to, Tom Brady just gave him a glowing review. And I'm starting to see him creep up the mock draft lists as well. Remember, he is a Heisman Trophy winner from 2 years ago. And so you got to throw those two guys. There's five quarterbacks who could go in the top 15 or 12, depending on what's going on. I don't think that's ever happened before. I don't know.
No, I'm
sure there are years, but But, man, I am very, very interested in this, and I don't think we're done. I don't think we have our order set yet as to who's going to be drafted.
And, Mitch,
when.
There's
going to be trades.
You and Bob have heard me say this before, but what in the case of Lamar Jackson, who's a streak of light and a compelling, wonderful college football player at Louisville, okay, don't you think it's fascinating how often we only compare – black quarterbacks to other black quarterbacks. It's just, it happens all the time. Oh, I don't know. Is Lamar going to be the new Geno Smith, or is he going to be the new Deshaun Watson? Nobody ever says with a running, throwing black quarterback, you know, this could be the second coming of Steve Young.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is outside of Baker Mayfield, all these guys were not stories in college football. Where they came out of, you know, they weren't playing for national championships.
No.
So you have to go and look them up. You know, well, what were their stats and what were they? But we don't really have a narrative on them. We know who Baker Mayfield is. He played in a lot of big, high-profile games in the course of last year and was in the mix in the playoffs. But these other guys, how often does that happen? You know, I guess the NBA draft, there are guys who are on, and this year's going to be a case where they were on a team that got knocked out in the first round of the tournament and you never got to see them play. But in football, generally, if you're that good, you're taking your team to some major games. These guys were, you know, Wyoming, UCLA. These guys weren't in the, were never in the playoff mix. And yet now they're being judged as who's going to save the NFL if they, you know, their team in the NFL if they come in. It's fascinating.
Yep. Raise your hand if you saw Josh Allen play.
Really?
No, one more thing on Baker Mayfield. In a lot of ways, Mitch, you know, he's probably the most dynamic of all of them. He's an exciting, fiery, oh, and dare I say, occasionally crotch-grabbing quarterback. But his height is his height. And the shorter quarterbacks who have won the NFL championship going back like 50 years is extremely small. It's basically Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. And I do think it is a factor in the evaluation of Baker Mayfield. I do.
Yeah, well, it will be. All right, Bob, you wanted to talk a little baseball?
Yes, Mitch, I don't know if you know this, but Mike and I have decided that it's really kind of fruitless and silly for the rest of baseball to keep on playing over the next 4.5-5 months because it's evident that the Boston Red Sox and New York Mets are intent on restaging the 1986 World Series. Each of them at 10-2, and I'm going to yield the floor to Mike about what exactly is the dynamic aside from the starting pitching, that the dream rotation circumstance that has always been there, and not always been, last 2 years. Is it finally starting to materialize,
yes,
Michael, or is there something else going on?
I will get, you know, everybody knows about Thor Syndergaard. Jacob DeGrom, even though he's cut his hair now, is, despite a sketchy start the other night in Miami, he's back. Steven Matz has as much talent. He has as much talent as any young left-hander they've had for a very long time in New York. So this is the way they pitched when they went to the World Series in 2015. But Sandy Alderson has assembled a really solid team. Adrian Gonzalez has much to prove at first base, is playing well. I love Todd Frazier, okay? Yeah. If they can keep Cespedes on the field, they have Michael Conforto in his sweet swing back. They just lost one of their catchers, Travis d'Arnaud. But Mitch, you cannot have a conversation about the Mets without talking about the cool breeze that blew into the manager's office this year, and that is Mickey Callaway, who has changed the culture and has turned out to be so much more than the pitcher whisperer he was when he was working for Terry Francona in Cleveland.
Well, what's impressed me in their first 12 games, and may I say, it is 12 games.
Sure.
There have been many teams that have popped off to this kind of a start and aren't even .500 at the end of the season. But okay, 10-2 is 10-2. Worth talking about at
least. No, they've only lost one game. They've only lost one game.
10-1 is 10-1. Red Sox are 10-2. So they're way behind in the race.
Yeah, they're not.
But
a lot of catching
okay,
up to do.
A new manager gets, you know, he gets that kind of grace when he's new and things start out really well. Of course, in New York, things will turn if things start to go south. What's impressed me is that they're not winning these games solely off of their starting pitching, which everybody knew was going to be good and was expecting. They're getting, you know, the scrappy hits. Gonzalez is, You know, I don't know if he can sustain this. Isn't he getting paid about $22 million by another team to play for New York?
And Mitch, six out of their 10 wins. Six out of the 10 have been comeback wins so far. Gonzalez was a pinch hitter the other night in Miami and knocked in the game-winning runs. Right. It's a very interesting lineup apart from the pitchers. You guys are right. And whether that's sustainable, and guess what? We're not even talking about them in a month if something happens to Cespedes again.
They need a catcher, though, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do.
They have to go out and market. I know that LaCroix's name been thrown out there. Is it possible he might be, available to somebody by the middle of the season? But Darno, what? No great loss, right?
No, and Plawecki got – then they get the news. I was down there when they were talking about the news about Travis d'Arnaud the other day. And then in that game that night, Kevin Plawecki gets hit in the hand. And, the x-rays turned out to be negative.
Yeah. All right, before the parting shots, there's a new boss in town at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. Ooh. It's the Bacon Boss Burger. The Bacon Boss Burger.
Oh, yeah. That's
featuring
right.
Bacon three different ways. I didn't even know there were three different ways you could do bacon. And a blanket of white cheese sauce. The Bacon Boss Burger is joined by other new favorites like the smothered cheesesteak quesadilla.
Okay.
As a Philadelphia guy, I have to say that's pretty amazing. Sweet chili shrimp, Alaska cod classic. They all pair perfectly with a Sam 76. A fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today and try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink
Mitch, can I just ask you a question? Because, I hang on every word in these reads you do, okay? What supplies in those meals are they are they worried about running out of? Is it the cheesesteak quesadilla? They've never run out of cheesesteak in Philadelphia, have they?
Not in Philadelphia, but I just think the Bacon Boss Burger is such a hot ticket that you can only keep so many in
the
franchise.
If they run out of bacon
time.
In the United States of America, Mitch, okay, there's no reason to go on. Okay, there's just no reason to go on. I don't want to. Do you want to live in a world without bacon?
I'm just the messenger, Michael. I don't bring home the bacon. I just carry it.
Ooh.
Time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan fires first.
You know, there had been great players putting up games with double figures in points, rebounds, and assists. Dr. Robertson and John Havlicek come to mind. But not until Lakers public relations chief Bruce Jolish became so inspired by Magic Johnson's nightly genius in the early 80s did we get introduced to the concept of the triple-double. Now, this, of course, has taken on a life of its own with Russell Westbrook. It didn't take too long before the triple-double was expanded to include blocks, thus the quadruple-double. Throw in steals and you have another triple-double possibility or yet another quad situation. Antoine Walker could have made it a quintuple with turnovers attached. Now, back to the basics. Rebounds were easier to come by in ye olden days when more shots were taken and missed. But getting an assist was a much more restricted concept, and it would have been laughable to give someone an assist on a 25-foot shot, which is commonplace today. Now, I just wish Bruce Jolish could have somehow patented his idea. He'd own a Pacific island by now. Oh, and Russell, good job, man. I know that in any era, it still ain't easy to get a triple-double.
Baseball fights are always dumb. Sometimes justified in a weird way, at least in the eyes of the participants. Sometimes not. But always dumb. And always dangerous. So the benches cleared a couple of times on Wednesday night at Fenway Park. The details are actually unimportant, even if they resulted in suspensions for the principals in the scrum, Joe Kelly and Tyler Austin of the Yankees. But it happened during a slog between the two teams that ended up taking 3 hours and 59 minutes. That's bad enough. What was worse was reading and hearing afterward that this was great because now we had the rivalry back. And immediately we were asked to remember all the previous Yankee-Red Sox fights from over the years, including the crazy one in the playoffs with Pedro Martinez and old Don Zimmer. And there was a time when Jason Varitek stuck a glove in Alex Rodriguez's face, something for which I frankly thought Varitek should have gotten a presidential medal. Here's the deal. If the rivalry needs that, people are right. It isn't what it used to be.
Listen, do you hear that?
What?
It's the sound of silence.
Oh, my God.
It's the sound of no LeVar Ball talking about his oldest son, Lonzo. It's the sound of Lonzo having nothing to talk about. It's the sound of absence from any once predicted rookie of the year discussions, or more importantly, any playoff discussions for Lonzo's Lakers. The big fizzle at the end of the wet firecracker that was the Lonzo Ball experiment was, if you look back, always predictable. There was more noise than game with Ball, primarily due to his knucklehead big ego father, who wouldn't shut up long enough for Lonzo to establish himself. So the rookie wound up averaging 10 points a game, not great, 7 rebounds and 7 assists, pretty good, and he missed 30 games due to injury, not good. Worst of all was his shooting percentages, which were abysmal for his position, in the mid-30% range from 2-point and barely 30 from 3. You are not going to star in the NBA with that. He's got a weird shot. He says he's not going to change it. Well, if he won't change it, he sure needs to work on it. He needs to develop more offense on pick and rolls, needs to develop a mid-range game, needs to develop, period. All things that, guess what? If he had stayed in college one more year, he might have accomplished. Instead, he's getting paid and he's getting punished by criticism, pressure, better players, and expectations. Let's hope Lonzo's sophomore year is an improvement. For now, his chance at rookie glory is as gone as his father's boasting. That's going to wrap things up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, so we'll be back in just 3 days with a lot to talk about, I'm sure, in the NBA playoffs and the NFL draft looming even larger. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.